Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, April 5th. Today, we're going to touch base with our good friend, Frank Burke. Frank, of course, an author, a contributor to American Thinker, as well as a businessman. And we're going to talk about a couple of big stories in the country. The first one is this politically correct culture in higher education. When you watch Marquette University, a Catholic university in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, invite Angela Davis as a distinguished speaker. They have a series of speakers, and I guess whoever they invite becomes a distinguished speaker. And to watch Marquette University select this lady as a distinguished speaker, frankly, insults my intelligence. I'm not against people talking. I'm not saying that she shouldn't be invited. I believe in free speech, unlike our friends in the left, but I just think that if she's going to speak, I hope they have a panel, and I hope they allow some people to ask this lady some very, very serious questions, because this is a lady who does not believe in free speech. This is a lady who doesn't like the United States a great deal, and if she had won the revolution, in other words, if Angela Davis or people like Angela Davis were running the country, the first school they would close would be Marquette University. I have experience with that in Cuba. When people like that come to power, the first thing they do is Catholic schools. So we'll talk about the PC culture in general in our higher education, and then we'll get into this unfolding story, and it's unfolding. It's very likely the next time we talk about this, this is even going to be bigger. But I'm talking about the unmasking of U.S. citizens, and the person in the middle of the story is Ambassador Susan Rice, and she's, of course, famous for saying back many years ago that it was a video that had caused the Benghazi terrorist attack. And we'll talk a little bit, too, about the Senate Democrats and Gorsuch. I've got a few things to say about that, but let me say hello from Wisconsin, our good friend Frank Burke. How are you, Frank?
Well, thanks, Silvio, and yourself.
Just great. I'm assuming it's lovely up there.
It's cloudy today, but the temperatures have been getting higher. So we're in the 50s, and now things are greening up, so that looks great.
You know, it's almost the same here. We're in the 50s as well, a little windy, but we're in the 50s as well. It had been a little warmer before, but these last couple of days, we're in the 50s. There's a threat of rain. But I think winter is finally behind us. I think, can we safely say that winter is finally behind us, Frank?
I think we can. You can get an aberration here. They normally tell people who like to garden not to plant until the end of May. But you have some nice weather. Now, tomorrow night it's supposed to go down to 29, but that's only for one night. And, it's not nothing serious, not by our standards.
No. I guess that's why they play baseball games during the day, in the early days of the season up in Minneapolis and Milwaukee, because when temperatures can drop to 30, that can be pretty tough to play baseball in temperatures like
exactly.
that. But I do want to say a couple of quick things here. On this day in history, three people are celebrating birthdays today: Spencer Tracy, Gregory Peck, and Betty Davis. Of course, they were born different years. All three have passed away. I'm not Betty Davis just doesn't really do anything for me. I don't, if I see one of her movies, I don't necessarily want to watch it, because she just doesn't do anything for me. But Spencer Tracy, especially in that movie Boys Town, Inherit the Wind, mm-hmm. A few others, was great. And Gregory Peck seems to be good at just about every movie he's in. One that I remember was one about the trial to kill a mockingbird, I think, wasn't it? The trial
Absolutely,
in the South.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're favorites of mine. I was wondering how you react to Spencer Tracy, Gregory Peck, and Bette Davis.
Well, you know, I'm really very much where you are. I never particularly liked Bette Davis. I just didn't see her as being terribly real in a lot of the movies. She was very mannered. Gregory Peck, I thought, was tremendous as an actor, and likewise Spencer Tracy. I can remember a lot of the fine roles that both of them played. The very young Gregory Peck in Alfred Hitchcock's Spellbound opposite Ingrid Bergman. See, that remains one of my favorite movies. And Spencer Tracy, as you say, in Inherit the Wind, I think it's hard to find anything better as a performance than him playing the Clarence Darrow role.
Right. And Gregory Peck also made a bunch of Westerns as well that I keep running into in that retro Western channel that we have. Every once in a while I'm flipping and I see Gregory Peck in a Western role, which is interesting. Spencer Tracy also in that role as the old man in the sea, the Hemingway. Mm-hmm. The Hemingway. So very interesting characters, all three of them, and they are obviously remembered as three of the greatest. Well, let's get started with our topics. We've got a couple of big ones, maybe three, if we talk a little bit about the Senate Democrats and Gorsuch. But I was very angry when I heard that Marquette University, a Catholic school in Milwaukee, was inviting Angela Davis to speak. And I'm angry not because it's not that I don't want people to speak. In fact, I like people to speak. But if they're going to invite somebody like Angela Davis, I hope they tell the audience who this lady really is. Because the last thing that would exist if Angela Davis and her people had won, the last thing that would exist would be a Marquette University, Frank.
Well, you know, I have to be honest with you, and that's that I've had a lot of experience with Marquette University. Our son, younger son, got his master's and his graduate degree there. And, of course, we used to live in Milwaukee, and I've actually guest lectured there on a couple of occasions on different subjects. But I have to say, and this seems to be true throughout the network of Jesuit-run schools, that there is this ultra-liberal kind of attitude. Long before Angela Davis, they were having people in there that were, as far as, you know, Christian beliefs, I won't even say Catholic beliefs, I'll say Christian beliefs, they were off the charts. There was a lot of pro-abortion activity, etc. And, you know, the Jesuits seemed to thrive on that, and especially, you know, you're seeing a lot of it with the new Pope who came out of that background. And just recently, the Archbishop, I think, down in Argentina just a couple of days ago, made the pronouncement that God had never said that marriage was for one man and one woman, that there could be a much more liberal definition of it. And I think, you know, these people are way down the slippery slope. But there's been a tradition of that. If you recall, back in the 1960s, there were two brothers who were priests, Jesuits, I believe, Daniel and Philip Berrigan. And the Berrigan brothers were war protesters. And I think it was Daniel that later left the priesthood and married an ex-nun. But remained I think he's dead now, but he remained an outspoken protester. So there is this feeling. Now, as you and I know, you know, when we were kids, the Jesuit order was considered like the intellectual branch of the clergy. It required a much greater amount of education, preordination, than, say, to become a regular parish priest. So there was a kind of elitism that attached to it. And in some cases, I just have to wonder if that doesn't go over the top into, you know, a kind of arrogance. and pride that makes them feel, yeah, it's okay for us to say these things.
Yeah, well, that could be. That could be. I know that in Latin America, the Jesuits have always been on the other side of the political line. In other words, for years and years, when you had right-wing governments in Latin America, the Jesuits would be on the other side, not because they were leftist or communist necessarily, not necessarily for that reason, but because they felt they had to stand up for some injustice and social injustice. And I can tolerate that to a point a lot more than inviting Angela Davis. The other thing too, it's one thing, it seems to me, it's one thing for a priest or a Catholic school or whatever to or for some priest to oppose a war, or let's say oppose discrimination. I know many priests, for example, were involved in the civil rights movement. But it's quite another thing to me when a priest or a bishop or whatever says, well, marriage isn't really supposed to be between a man and a woman, you know, or you even have nuns, you know, you even have nuns now, right? You know, there's even a movement of nuns who support abortion. Not that many, but I've seen her on television. I've seen them on TV and so on. And I think that to me, a Catholic clergy person, nun or priest, who says something like that should be thrown out of the clergy. Mm-hmm. I don't see how you can say that marriage, that God didn't say that marriage was between a man and a woman. Well, what did he say then? I mean, I thought that was pretty clear from the beginning that marriage was, you know, that was one of the Catholic things that we all believed in. It doesn't mean that you hate homosexuals. It doesn't mean you decapitate homosexuals or something like that. That's not what it means. I mean, you love the sinner, as the story goes, but man, for a priest to say that God didn't make it clear, well, I don't know what books he's reading, Frank.
Right. Well, you know, I think this goes deep. This goes deep. This is a very deep discussion, Silvio, because I think one of the things that really is at fault here, and now it has come out, has to do with the enforced celibacy for both priests and nuns. And, you know, for many, many years, clearly, to have an all-male situation like that was very attractive to people who were homosexual, and I'm sure also an all-female situation. Now, when I was a young man, when I was in grammar school, I had thoughts, as most Catholic schools do, of possibly being a priest. And one of the high schools that I applied to was Cathedral High School, which is in New York, and it was the preparatory seminary it was a high school, but preparatory seminary. And when I mentioned that to one of the priests in our parish, who was a personal family friend and very much a good guy, he said, Frank, you don't want to go to Cathedral. It's full of mollies. So I did avoid it. But when you had that, and you know, in doing the research on the book that I wrote with Dr. Farkas, on the media and the justice systems, one of the cases we considered was the pedophilia scandal within the Catholic Church. And we didn't touch it because it was too big. It would have taken up the whole book. But as part of the research, I obtained a copy of the study that the U.S. Council of Bishops commissioned on that. And, you know, it was ironic because 81% of the incidents of pedophilia were male on male. 81%. And yet they said, well, homosexuality has nothing to do with this situation. Well, I'll tell you, the way I would put it as someone who studied statistics is this. Not every homosexual is a pedophile, but a great many pedophiles are homosexual. So You know, we're into a whole big discussion, but when you get into that, I think if that's the mindset, as homosexuality has become more socially acceptable, I can see some of the people who are in those positions coming out in favor of it, or trying to make it look like it's the right thing. I'm sorry it took so long to say that.
No. No, that's all right. I understand, because I've heard things like that too about the church. But I had a conversation one time with the priest that we had visiting our church, and he said to me that what he regrets most about that whole episode, that whole scandal of the priest and the children, is that it stained so many good priests. Because you know when there are thousands of priests, millions of priests, obviously who never did anything like that, and unfortunately they got caught up in the scandal. But back to Angela Davis for a second. I think the problem that I have, again, it's not that she was invited. I'm not against eliminating speech, but I'm simply saying that if you're going to invite somebody like Angela Davis, I hope that they have a panel of people, or I hope they have the opportunity, or give people. I mean, I would love to be there and ask her a question about some of the regimes that she has supported over the years, regimes that she likes, and regimes that who the first thing they would do would be to cancel or close Marquette University because it is a Catholic university, or it's a private university. And that's the thing. I hope that as they introduce her, when they talk about her background, just don't talk about the fact that she was a revolutionary. Talk about the fact that she was a revolutionary whose objective was to overthrow the United States and the freedoms, Frank, that we enjoy, such as listening to people with a different point of view, Frank.
Yes, absolutely. No, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, it's, I'll be honest, I think that there's tremendous upheaval in the church today. And if you wanted to go back historically, you would take it back to the Second Vatican Council, probably, when many of the things that for years were considered immutable and forever were suddenly swept away. And a lot of people in that case lost their bearings. But when you look at, and it's this kind of thing that enables an institution like Marquette University to invite Angela Davis. Or another example is Georgetown University. When Barack Obama spoke at Georgetown University, the cross symbol that was behind him in the auditorium, wherever, was covered up. So, you know, these are people who are going into denial of some of the basic tenets of what is supposed to be their faith.
That's right. And I remember now what you're talking about, President Obama. He was president already, right, when he did that, right, when he spoke at Georgetown. He was already President Obama. No, but I just think that when, you know, my position is, because I don't want to get an email from somebody saying that I'm just as bad as the people in the left who want to shut down speakers. No, not at all. I don't want to shut down.
No.
I would not have invited her, okay, but because I think that there are better examples of a person from the left than Angela Davis. But, you know, if she's going to go and speak, I just hope that people, there are people in a panel or people who will ask her some questions and challenge some of the things that she has said as recently as on the day that, or the weekend of Mr. Trump's inauguration, when she and a bunch of other women were making a bunch of radical attacks on the United States. I mean, when she refers to the United States as a country run by white men or whatever. I mean, I like to challenge that and see what she means by that. I hope they don't let her get away with a lot of those remarks. But I was disappointed when I saw it, because I can think of better examples. If you want to create conversation between the left and the right, I can think of a lot better examples from the left than Angela Davis. In other words, more serious people from the left who may be to the left of you and I, Frank, but who at least believe in democracy and free speech and are willing to live within the democratic choices of a country. Angela Davis doesn't really believe that, Frank.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't. And but this has become, you know, these people who were criminals are now regarded by the left as heroes. You have that woman who killed the cop in New Jersey and has been hiding in Cuba all these years. And when Obama went down there and reestablished relations, he never said, hey, you know, part of this is contingent on returning that woman to face trial. And he never got anything. He never said, look, if we're going to do this, let's release your political prisoners. Let's take them out of jail. So, you know, this is the attitude of the left. It's
that's right.
Look at the closeness with Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn.
That's right. No, this is exactly right. And these people, again, I'm not saying that we should deny. We're going to take a little break and come back and talk a little bit about unmasking U.S. citizens. But I just wanted to say one more thing about this. I'm not against them speaking. I just think
right.
that they need to be challenged. They need to be challenged when they speak, and they need to explain. For example, in the case of the fellow in Chicago, the fellow who was, I can't think of his name right now, I'm drawing a blank, though you just mentioned him a minute ago.
Bill Ayers.
Bill Ayers, yeah. In the case of that man, I think he needs to be challenged about
yes.
some of the things that he says, such as he doesn't regret any of it. Well, if he doesn't regret any of it, to me, that's not a good sign. That doesn't show me that he's a very good that he's a very good person. Frank, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back, and we've got a lot more to get into with our friend Frank right after this.
This is Carlos Quedes, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
Let me tell you that we had a chance to go to this show a few weeks ago. We're probably going to go back Saturday night. This is a really great show here in Dallas with Carlos at Nola. Nola is a great Louisiana-style place to eat here in Dallas, and Carlos has been playing music there on Saturday nights. He's absolutely fantastic. The music is absolutely great. And all I can say is try it. And, of course, Carlos is a great friend of our show. We've been using his music for a long time. But I will tell you that it is a great way of spending a Saturday night. That much I can tell you from having done it ourselves a few weeks ago. Let's get back to our friend Frank Burke. Frank, there's another little unfolding scandal here that sort of goes back to the Obama administration a little bit. And our friend Susan Rice seems to be in the middle of this one again. Of course, Susan Rice, well-known and very famous for having said that a video caused Benghazi. It's a difficult story to follow, but as I understand it, it basically means that let's say that you and I are talking and I happen to be under surveillance, particularly if I'm a foreign national, let's say. Whatever you say to me or your name is not supposed to be known, which is what they call masking. And as
That's
I understand
correct.
the Obama or Susan Rice, the allegation is that she was unmasking the name of some U.S. citizens, and in doing so, violating their civil liberties, but also potentially a felony, Frank, from what I understand.
Yes, indeed. And, of course, you know, one of the things that that can happen here, and I'm sure that was intended by the administration to happen, is the fact that, let's say, you were talking to the Russian ambassador, and it could have been a totally... Yeah, the Russian ambassador talked to everybody. This is the whole thing with Flynn. Now, I fought Flynn on some other things. He didn't divulge a lot of his contacts with Turkey and whatever, which is terrible. He should have been much better vetted. But let's say it's an individual who's talking to the Russian ambassador, and it's just about something. Maybe let's come up with something. Look, I have a friend of mine fell in love with a girl in Russia when he was over there, and we'd like to see if there's a way that you could help us get her over to the United States. Could you work with the State Department? And that's the essence of the conversation, okay? But now all that's said is, by the way, did you know Silvio Canto was holding talks with the Russian ambassador, making it sound like, you know.
Right.
And he worked for the Trump.
And then on top of that, he, let's say, you bring up my name. And by the way, he works with Trump, so you're trying to somehow, which is what I think they're trying to do here. They're trying to say that Trump had connections to Russia because, let's say, somebody was talking to the Russian ambassador about, like you say, you know, bringing his girlfriend over here or whatever. And this is now, this goes out there without the filters and without all of that. And now we're saying, well, there's a connection between Russia and Trump. I think it's pretty ugly, Frank. And my sense, and I don't know anything other than, you know, the best way to learn about things is to go back. But these are the people, as you remember, these are the people who use the IRS. These are the people who lied about Fast and Furious. They lied about Benghazi. So they don't exactly, especially Susan Rice. I think, who was it, the senator who said that with Susan Rice, you verify, you don't trust.
Yes, Lindsey Graham.
Exactly. I thought that was a great line. But I think they were up to no good, Frank.
Oh, they were definitely up to no good. They were a passel of god awful people from day one, and they do not like America. They do not like the United States at all. You know, and if that sounds extreme, you have to realize where they're coming from. I think this whole last election was a choice between nationalism, namely, do you love the United States? Are we exceptional? Is this the country we are loyal to? And, quote, globalism. In effect, do you believe that there are some elite individuals who should be in charge and tell the rest of us poor peons what to do? Because, you see, everybody in the world is the same. It's all one world, and it's not. So I think that's a big part of it. That explains their the end justifies the means philosophy. But this woman has been a total disgrace, and why anyone would put her on a mission like that is crazy.
Right. Well, I thought it was interesting that now some of the people defending her, and you knew this was going to happen, Frank. In fact, I remember a couple of days ago joking with a good friend of mine here and joking and saying, we were talking about Susan Rice or the allegations, and I said, you know, it's only a matter of time before they say that this is because she's black and she's a woman. Yeah, exactly. And last night, I guess on MSNBC, they were saying that this is only happening because she's black and she's a woman, which, you know, it's obscene for people to go to in that direction, because this has nothing to do with her gender or race. It has to do with what she apparently did. But I have a theory, Frank, about the people in the Obama team, that I think they got used to the fact that they got away with some of these things. Look, they got away with Fast and Furious, which I thought, you know, was not just a terrible idea to do what they did, or to do it the way they did it, or the implementation. But a lot of people in the United States don't know that something like 300 or 400 innocent Mexicans had been killed by these guns. I mean, it's been pretty deadly down there. And then you had the IRS scandal, which I always thought was about the worst. It couldn't get any worse than that. And you know, you had the Attorney General Holder in contempt of Congress. But I think these people always thought was that they always had the media to protect them. And as long as there was a As long as there was a Democrat in the White House, the Democrat in the White House and the media to protect them, they can get away with it. The problem right now is that there's a Republican in the White House willing to investigate them, and the media that for years they thought would protect them is losing audience and losing credibility. So in a sense, it's like the landscape has changed. You know, they were skating on ice, but now that ice is different, and they don't know what to do, Frank.
Well, you're absolutely right, Silvio. And the media gave them cover. And the thing to remember on all of this, on the whole plan and program, and I'm including Obamacare, which, by the way, is going to crash starting in Knoxville, Tennessee, where nobody's going to be able to even buy insurance.
That's right.
People are pulling out. But well, what was expected, see, that this was all based on one idea, and the idea was that Hillary Clinton was going to be president. So if Hillary Clinton was president, yes, we know Obamacare is going to fail, then she'll institute single-payer health care, socialized medicine. And all of these, any investigation into Fast and Furious, the IRS, will all be stopped by President Clinton. And that was the plan. And the reason that they are so shaken is the fact not just that Trump won, but that, you know, the old saying, the jig is up. It's all over. A lot of these things are not going to happen. And not only that, a lot of people like Susan Rice are going to find themselves in big trouble. And I would not be surprised if ultimately one of them was Barack Obama.
Well, he was, you know, if this was all done without the knowledge of President Obama, then I have to tell you that President Obama is the most aloof human being who has ever walked the planet, because he told us that he learned about Fast and Furious from reading the papers, that he
yes.
learned about the IRS from reading the papers, and he learned about the Obamacare website breaking up from reading the papers.
Right.
And I guess you'll tell us now that he learned about this while reading the paper. And
well, but don't forget, Sylvia, he also told us that he hadn't any. He was so proud because there was no scandal at all, not even one, not even a smidgen of a scandal in his whole 8 years.
Well, I think he's going to be surprised that that may come back to haunt him a little bit, like the promises about Obamacare. But let me jump to another quick topic here, Frank, just for a few minutes. I have a post coming out Thursday morning, I hope, where I argue that the Senate Democrats are really making fools of themselves, that they're really wrecking the institution of the Senate but with their behavior. And we hear that many of these Senate Democrats are under a tremendous amount of pressure to go after Gorsuch and to go after Trump, but particularly Gorsuch, and mm-hmm. that their contributors are basically saying, if you don't go after Gorsuch, we're not going to send you another dime. And I wish that the country could really use a Senate Democrat to go to the microphone and say, you know what, I'm not going to wreck the institution for your contribution. If you don't want to send me a contribution because I believe in the dignity of the U.S. Senate, here's what you can do with your contribution. And you remember back in 2006 when they went after Lieberman over the Iraq War, and Lieberman ran as an independent and still got reelected. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I wish some of these Senate Democrats had the backbone, the spine, to stand up to these agitators. These are bad people, these agitators. And they are willing to wreck the system. They're willing to wreck anything just to get their way. And I wish there was a Democrat, Frank, who would stand up to them, Frank.
I would agree with you, Silvio, and I am amazed that nobody has. And it's, you know, they talk about their base. Well, it's not the base per se. It's the contributors. It's George Soros, who, by the way, his university in Hungary is being closed down. They're de-Sorosifying everything in Hungary, his native land. The guy is just no good. And, you know, he is the leader of the band on funding all these things. I just read this morning that one of his outfits was involved in the gassing of people in Syria as a kind of blind to force the hand of the United States. So, you know, it's you're looking at, the, at what I heard from one commentator, not really a commentator, but a guest on a program we were being interviewed, and he said, you know, I had a meeting yesterday with, this is 2 days ago, with one of the top Democrats, and he said, every one of us, and I said to him, why are you doing this? This is crazy with Gorsuch. Gorsuch is a choir boy. He's a Boy Scout. He's not the guy you want to go after. And he said, every one of us is scared to death of being primaried. And our big donors have told us that unless we toe the line and oppose literally everything that Trump does, they will support opposition candidates to come up in the primaries and take us down.
Right. And I believe that, by the way. I believe that.
I do, too.
That is, that is exactly what others are saying. But I also will tell you that if I was in that situation, let's say if I was in the right and I was a senator from the right and I was getting the base was basically telling me, or these contributors were basically telling me to wreck the Senate because they want to bring somebody down, I would be willing to say, hey, look, guys, take your money somewhere else and go ahead and run a primary against me if you want to. I think a lot of the Democrats that that we're talking about, if you're liberal, you're pretty safe. But some of the ones who they're going after, you know, like the ones in red states, those Democrats, I don't know that they're going to be hurt that much by a primary in their state. They've got bigger problems to be reelected than a primary. But at the end of the day, it just seems to me that these people are crazy. And I would say people talk about the base, and I agree with you. It's really not the base. I cannot believe that the 47% of the people who voted for Hillary Clinton are proud of watching what is being done to Gorsuch by some of these senators. These idiotic questions and this idiotic behavior. I cannot believe that most Democrats are watching that and enjoying that. I just cannot believe it. It's a small group of people, and that's why I'm surprised that you haven't had one Senate Democrat say, folks, I'm not going to participate in this witch hunt. That's just not the kind of man I am, and if you don't want to contribute to my campaign, well, do whatever you want. That kind of thing. Call their bluff. Frank.
Well, you know, I agree with you, but I'd like to, you know, this is kind of, it's interesting, there's a cyclicality in what you're saying. Given the way in which these people have misused the surveillance and intelligence apparatus, and who right now could trust any of it? I heard another person who had been high up in the CIA say that Obama literally populated it with political fanatics, that the CIA, which was apolitical for many years, now is not. It is filled with people with a virulent left-wing agenda. So let's say you want to step out of line. Let's say you are that senator, and somebody comes to you and sits down and says, you know, Silvio, there's that woman in your life. You say, oh, you mean my wife? No. I mean the woman you've been seeing, the other woman. I haven't been seeing another woman. Well, we can make it kind of look like you've been seeing another woman.
Right. Yeah. We can do a little photoshopping here. We can do a little photoshopping and
right.
create all kinds of bad news. And by the time you get around to denying it, it's all over the Internet, something like that, right?
Exactly. Well, look at what they did to that fellow years ago who was going to be governor of Washington. He had a tremendous lead, and they started all these investigations, and he lost. And as soon as he lost, they went back, and they said, well, you know, really, this was baseless. We've investigated and found out he's really a good guy, but he had lost
right.
the governorship. And look at what
right.
Harry Reid said. After he accused George Romney of not paying his taxes. And they said after the election, well, that wasn't true. And Reid's
right.
response was, well, we won, didn't we?
That's right. In fact, if Harry Reid had known that information, he was violating the law, because you're not supposed to know, you know, the IRS is not supposed to tell the majority leader what the whether or not the GOP candidate had paid his taxes. I mean, that's a line but you know, not supposed to be crossed. So
Maddow, who gave Rachel Maddow that page of Donald Trump's tax returns?
That's right. That's right. Well, I think, Frank, that the next time we chat, that I have a funny feeling that Susan Rice is going to be part of our chat.
Yes, we just can't keep Susan out of our mind.
No, we just can't. We thought we had gotten rid of her with the change of president, but it looks like she's back, and she's back. Maybe she's going to be back a lot more than she wants to, Frank.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, Sylvia, one of the things about our conversations is that they frequently include musical references. And those references are generally to rock and roll. But I am going to take a giant step backward to at least the 20s and probably before and recall a song that went, "If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, 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 what a girl."
That's right. And I'm going to go back myself and do a little rock on you about Obamacare. You know that song by Harry Nilsson, "One is a Lonely Number"? Well, one is a lonely number when it comes to love, but zero is a really bad number when it comes to health care. So I just wanted to see that, you know, there's always a musical connection to the two of us, but one is the loneliest number when it comes to love, and zero is a really bad number when it comes to Obamacare options. So we've got so we both got our musical, our musical infusions today on the show. So but as always, I want to thank you for joining me and for your time. And it's always a lot of fun. But I just know that we'll be talking about Susan the next time around. I just think that she's going to be in the conversation this year quite a bit, Frank.
I think she is, and, you know, it will not surprise me if there are a lot more in the conversation. I think the rock has been turned over, and the cockroaches are running out. Now we just have to see which ones they are.
Right, so there's going to be a lot more than Susan, probably. I think that's what you're saying, and I wouldn't be surprised, again, I wouldn't be surprised if even President Obama is drawn into this, because it's just she's too close to him for him not to know. I mean, if he doesn't know, then he wasn't paying attention for 8 years. That's all I can tell you, because she's just way too close to him to do something like this by herself. I just don't believe it, Frank. I just don't believe it. Well, have a great day, Frank.
You know,
we're going to have to run.
Can I make one
comment? Go right ahead.
And that is, if you take a look at, and this is very disappointing to me. Now, we're all free. We can all do what we want to do. But for 8 years, nominally, Barack Obama was president of the United States. And he is now on an extended vacation on an island that Marlon Brando used to own near Tahiti, reputedly at like $3,000 a day, something like that, a ridiculous amount of money. But the bottom line is, couldn't he have gone somewhere where he would have been supporting an American business, where he would have been supporting American citizens?
Well, yeah, I mean, where does he get $3,000 a day? I mean, is he a guest of somebody? That's a lot of money. I mean,
well,
I know
he's got this big
book
deal.
Well, okay, maybe so. But even so, I don't know. I guess if I was an ex-president, I wouldn't go to an island that was $3,000 a day. I don't know. I just think that there's good taste and there's bad taste. And I think going to an island like that, I understand he wants a little bit of privacy, and that's fine. I understand that. I mean, it's a very difficult job, Frank. I mean, I don't care who it is. It's a very difficult job, and you do need, you need to, as they say, disconnect from the everyday stuff. And maybe going to an island without phones and anything is maybe what you have to do, and I understand that. But when he comes back to the real world, though, I think he may find out that some of his old buddies were up to no good. He may want to go back to the island, Frank.
Well, yes, it may be another island too.
Maybe another island too. That's right. It may be another island that he wants to go back to. But thank you as always for your time, and have a wonderful week. And we'll chat very soon, Frank. It's always a lot of fun to chat with you.
God bless.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye now.
Frank Burke, our good friend up in Wisconsin, author, businessman, contributor. We have a link to his book on the show information. Always enjoy talking to Frank. Always enjoy the politics, the good fun that we have when we chat with Frank. Goodbye, everybody. This is Silvio Cantu and Dom.